Welcome to David Clark's We Are Superman podcast, episode number 288. I am your host, Bill Stahl. Hey, sorry about the gap in We Are Superman podcast episodes as I battled COVID and I've been dealing with some rather severe at times hip and knee pain, and I've had several guests shuffle recording times due to life occurrences. I hope you, though, had an opportunity to watch the Olympic Trials Marathon. There were a few surprises and so many awe-inspiring performances despite the heat and humidity in Orlando. I mean, seriously, what are they thinking scheduling these races in Florida and so that they finish in the early afternoon? Anyhow, I had to look up the women's winner, Fiona O'Keefe, and the third place finisher, Dakota Lindworm, the latter who was a walk-on at Division II Northern State University in South Dakota. Now, there's a story that should inspire the underdogs out there. And then you had the BYU training partners Connor Mance and Clayton Young, who finished together 1-2, and Lenny Career from the U.S. Army Elite Running Program, who literally was never in contention and not even mentioned on the broadcast until he burst into third place right at the end. I also became a fan of Zach Panning for taking out the pace and leading the pack, but couldn't quite hold on to a top three placing. But super fun watching to watch while I ran on my treadmill. Well, we are back with the first of many really awesome guests. We are into the dog days of winter now, and for a lot of folks, the days are gray and cold, and New Year's resolutions are starting to fade into oblivion. That's why I thought it would be great to bring back Dan Herman, whose upbeat approach to health, fitness, and setting goals would be a refreshing antidote to the winter blahs. Dan owns Dan Herman Performance in New Jersey, and I think he offers some of the most practical advice people can employ to knock out fitness and nutrition goals in sensible ways and not succumb to the hype of online hawkers of canned fitness programs and supplements that have not been scientifically studied. It's not just that Dan had once been 375 pounds, lost weight, got fit, and now thinks he knows it all. Dan has earned numerous certifications and knows great ways to help people develop solid plans to overcome obstacles that prevent them from following through on their stated goals. Plus, I always enjoy Dan's positivity for a guy who lives in Jersey. I hope you take away a few nuggets from this dynamic chat. But first, if your running motivation is also flagging in this rough winter for many of us in the U.S., UESCA certified coach Mickey McConaughey and I have begun the Be Positive Runners community. Mickey and I provide you customized personal workouts on the Training Peaks app, and we will have group online calls where you can share experiences, tips, and provide encouragement to one another. Hopefully this will develop into group trips to goal races. We will initially limit the community to 10 motivated individuals who want to help themselves and others knock out their 2024 goals. If interested, shoot me a message at silly_billy@msn.com or on Facebook or Instagram messengers, and we can talk to see if you would like to be a Be Positive runner to achieve more in 2024. Or mention it to a friend who you think could use this kind of positive community. Okay, now here is Dan Herman and me. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Bill. How are you?
Well, I'm doing good. I'm really glad not to be in New Jersey anymore. Sorry.
Thank you.
Yep.
We're glad not to have you.
Yep, I know. Well, no, actually, every Rangers, Giants, Yankees fan, they were all happy I was there. But no, I was really bummed out we couldn't manage to hook up when I was there. But yeah, I was just there earlier this week. So 4 days of glorious New Jersey clouds and dreary and rain and just such a great reminder why the hell I don't live there anymore. Well, in New York, not New Jersey. Yeah.
A myriad of shades of gray.
Right.
That's what we have here. It's a shame. I've said it countless times, but you know, I've lived in a few places, but for folks who have never lived in the Northeast, seasonal affective disorder is real.
Yeah.
To say that the sun goes away probably the end of October, early November, and for the most part doesn't come back out in earnest until April. And it has the potential to really suck the life out of you, you know, if you're not careful. Right. But we make do.
Yeah.
The snow's been really light this year. We've hardly had any. The temperatures have been pretty you know, pretty mild for the most part. So we've done
yeah. okay. No, that was amazing. When I was out running on Monday morning, I went out and ran like an hour and 40 minutes along the Raritan River towpath there, you know, canal, which I'd never been down there before. You know, obviously a little gem in New Jersey. I mean, I'd never anticipated I'd see a great blue heron while I was out running in New Jersey, but it was green. I was really yeah. shocked. Not like there were leaves on the trees, but yeah, the grass was green. It's just crazy. That's not what I'm used to here. You know, in January, of course, and in Colorado, it is brown and white.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Which it kind of should be, but you know, this is where we are, man.
Yeah,
this is where we are.
You bet. Well, good. Well, hey, glad to have you at least on video here. And it's been a while, but. You know, off air, we're talking a little bit about goal setting, and I figured, you know, this is the perfect thing to talk about beginning of the year. I mean, we're a month into the year already, and, you know, people, find goals, they find direction in their goals in some of the weirdest places. You know, I think we're, you know, you have your, you know, personal training business, and yeah, I don't know how else you'd like to describe it. I mean, you are, you know, trained, you've got experience, and yet people go out and find their training in all sorts of strange ways. You know, it's like I was having a discussion earlier about, you know, the whole Taylor Swift thing right now, how everybody's mm-hmm. getting apoplectic over the fact that, oh my God, Taylor Swift may influence people to vote. And I'm like, God, if you actually base your vote on what a social media influencer or celebrity tells you,
there's a deeper conversation to be had there.
Yeah, exactly. You're an idiot. That's the deeper yeah. part. I mean, it's like, yeah. you know, I guess people want to say, hey, I let them make up my mind for me and I don't have to think about the issues myself. It's kind of the same way with the goal setting and everything. People say, hey, there's a social media influencer, so they will tell me how to have a goal or something, right?
I would agree with that. And the role of external motivation, specifically as it relates to, and I'll just use the blanket term, health and wellness. You could say fitness. You could go into the endurance space, strength and conditioning. It all really applies. But the amount of reliance or over-reliance on external motivation, I think, is concerning. Maybe a little bit. Yep. I think it's helpful to a point, but at some juncture, you need to be able to say, okay, that was enough to get me moving. Now it's up to me. So that motivation has to stem from within. So I use it as an example, like watching Goggins, you know,
right.
go do whatever Goggins does. That lights the match, but it's up to you to keep it lit.
Yeah. Well, it's like Ken Clover
which can be yeah. really hard to do. And,
yeah.
And that gets into the other aspects of, you know, what I wanted to get into with you today, but it's everywhere. Social media in the health and wellness and fitness space is huge. It's for the most part, very supportive.
Yeah.
There are exceptions to that though.
Yeah. No, you know, talk about Goggins and that. I mean, Ken Clober, who founded the Leadville 100, mm-hmm. often said motivation is BS. You know, it's like if you can't motivate yourself, then you got, you know, it's not going to happen. And you can listen to all the Goggins and other motivation that you want.
Sure.
But unless, you know, it is hardwired in you that you are going to put everything into getting to the finish line, all this rah-rah stuff is BS.
Oftentimes when we're looking to lean into a particular thing or we're looking to achieve a thing, we look for the motivation or the mood to come first. But really it's mood follows action, right?
Right.
We feel better by doing the thing. So if your intent is to go out for a walk or go out for a run, you have to take what is the shortest step I can take to get myself closer to doing that, whether it's, you know, putting your shoes right by the door, you know, all these little steps that you can take that I've used with clients in the past that can be really helpful. And each person is different. There is no blanket one size fits all approach in order to fix all of your problems as it relates to longevity and health and wellness and fat loss and body composition change and all these things. It's what are the barriers for you? Let's acknowledge them let's accept them if we can, and or work to accept them. And then it's, how can we set you up for the most success possible? And again, that can be through movement, through nutrition, you know, certainly ties right in there too. But I think we often overcomplicate things, and then we get lost on what to do when we set goals. When we set goals, it's like, okay, that's it. I set my goal, or my personal favorite, the New Year's resolution. And then, okay, now what?
Right.
You know, what do you, well, one of my favorite people on the planet and a mentor, former US Olympian, Dan John, always says, well, what do you mean by that? You say, I'm setting a resolution. This is what I'm doing. Okay. So what do you mean by that? What are you going to do? And that's where people get lost. And that's why having a plan, I think, is probably more important than being overly specific on your goals. It's like we talked about off air. I can say, Bill, as I'm sitting here living in New Jersey, that I want to go to Boulder. So I walk over to my map and I take a push pin and I stick it in Boulder, and I've declared I want to go to Boulder, but yet I have no clue how to get there. I have no map. I haven't plugged it into Google Maps or Waze or whatever we're using these days. I have no left, right turns. The best I have is just start walking west. If my pants get wet, I've probably gone too far. Right. But that I feel can be our approach to goals. We need to do better. And there are, you know, we can get as specific on this as you want, but there needs to be a roadmap, literally and figuratively, to how we intend to carry these things out, all the way down to, here are my overarching goals. What do I look for midterm? And then ultimately, what am I going to do today? And what am I going to do tomorrow in this moment that can help me get that much closer?
Right. Yeah, it's like the old expression, was it goals without plans or just dreams or something like that? I mean, yeah, you can throw this
and
out
resolution
there
thing is overblown. The whole idea of a resolution is overblown. The definition of a resolution, and I'm paraphrasing a little bit, is the decision whether to or not to do something. I think I've got that pretty close. Okay, so if you decide on a resolution, what is your plan to get there? Because otherwise you're going to be 2-3 months down the road and be completely rudderless out in the open waters. And we want to try to avoid that. Me in my position as a personal trainer and as a coach, I have to give you something actionable on a daily basis that helps you nudge yourself closer. Right.
Very true.
Yeah.
So how do you suggest people approach it then?
So one of the exercises that was taught to me years ago, well, I shouldn't say years ago. I knew about it years ago, but it was driven home recently when I was at a kettlebell certification up in Jersey City. Again, Dan John, I spoke of him before. He refers to what he calls the 5-2 assignment, the 5-2 assignment. And he starts with where you want to see yourself in 2 decades, and then 2 years, and then 2 weeks or 2 months, one or the other.
Okay.
And then the last two are today and tomorrow. And so in this moment, there were maybe 20 of us in the room at the time taking the certification. So we all sat down and did it together and talked through it. Fascinating to hear both long range and short range dreams, goals, aspirations. But a funny thing happens, or happened for me, when I scoped or sketched out my 2 decades, 20 years, like it's just crazy to consider. And you write down what you want there. As you get more and more towards today and tomorrow, you find, as you read back up the list, that everything that you have there nudges you closer to 2 years, and then what you want for 2 decades.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Okay. So it could be, you know, there were some folks who have financial goals, completely valid, of course, right? Financial goals, body measurements, fitness levels. Like one of mine, I don't think I have it right in front of me. One of mine is I want to be the strongest guy I know. Really, really, really kind of ego driven, but I want to be the strongest guy I know. I want to be able to be independent. I want to be able to get up and down off the floor at will.
Right.
You know, I don't want to be a burden on someone else. As far as overarching 2 decades goals, I think that's a really good place to start for me. Now, I also came from a position of, once weighing almost 400 pounds. So my perspective is a little different there. So as I got closer, 2 years, okay, 2 years, I want to be, say, in the best aerobic shape of my life. I want to be back in racing shape.
Right.
Right. And then 2 weeks or 2 months, okay, I want to hit this number of strength workouts. I want to hit this number of runs. And then today and tomorrow, I'm like, and then boom, there's your roadmap. Now, that was really specific as it relates to one particular path.
Yeah, but so I like the financial goal aspect of when you look at that kind of timeline, because most people are looking at a financial goal over 20 years, mm-hmm. or longer, whatever. But mm-hmm. and definitely, if you want to achieve wherever you want to be in 2 decades, what you do today makes a big difference. It might be, hey, maybe I shouldn't be going out and buying that new Porsche today. Or maybe it's just simply, maybe I don't need to, buy this fancy dress or whatever it is. But your actions today are definitely going to have an impact, maybe small, but it obviously, with compound interest and everything, it all adds up to 20 years down the road.
Yeah. I agree with that 100%. Let me distill that down into a little bit more of an analogous takeaway. Do we really need to stop and get coffee every day?
Right.
Which, again, goes to the whole, what are we talking about for coffee these days? $3, $4, $5, whatever it is, wherever you are. It's the incremental thing. It may not seem like a lot when you go swipe your card, but when you add it up over and over and over again, it amounts to something so much bigger, right? The same thing is true with James Clear refers to them as atomic habits, right? Like tiny little things that you can do that don't seem like much on their own, but when you stack wins one on top of the other,
right?
Suddenly your ground floor is so much higher, right? So if you're not spending that $3, $4, $5 on your cup of coffee, maybe you're making your coffee at home. Hell, you're saving $3, $4, $5 a day. How many days a week, how many months a year, how many years? Suddenly it looks like so much more of a thing. And I think when we're talking about goals and how we approach getting to them, having an overarching look at things really, really long range, I think is helpful. But at the same time, you have to have a roadmap to get there. You have to have a roadmap together. Otherwise, it's like signing up for the Leadville 100 and saying, "Well, I guess I'll just go for it."
Right.
I do not suggest that. I don't think. But
no, it reminds me of the first marathon I ran that I knew nothing, and it was the Penn Relays Marathon in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and I started training for it 5 weeks before. This is back in the 70s. There was nothing I could look up. There was no, internet to look it up. And I thought, I'm running. Well, 5 weeks before. And one of those weeks was spring break in Fort Lauderdale. So so let's just say my first marathon experience didn't quite go as well as I'd hoped. Made it 20 right. miles in shoes today we'd call cross trainers, by the way.
things have come along quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Over the years.
Yeah. But, going back to your analogy there, like I drink tea, for instance, and I can buy a whole box of Lipton tea bags, 100 of them for, $4 or $5. Mm-hmm. Well, so interesting concepts that was taught to me by somebody is, okay, if I'd gone to Starbucks, they don't charge a lot for tea, but it's, $3 or whatever. But, hey, that's a heck of a difference right there. If I take that money that I save and throw it in a jar every time, and then all of a sudden I got this big old jar full of, lot of money that I saved in the course of a year. And you go do something good with it,
And it doesn't always have to look the same way either.
Right.
I get a lot of mileage in my work, helping people through nutritional issues. As a nutritional coach, that's part of what I do.
Yeah.
So, you know, for a lot of people, foods are triggers. A lot of folks are still working from home or still spending a good bit of time at home and are surrounded with things that trigger them. So it's really important to understand too, like you had said, making your tea at home. I think that's great versus going out. What can I do to be incrementally better in this moment? Whether it's, again, through performance, you know, getting stronger, going for walks, which I think is totally undervalued. You and I spoke, what, about a year ago? I was talking about it then. I'm still talking about it now. People just aren't walking enough. We're just not. Like, we just don't. We refuse. Getting more steps in throughout the course of our day instead of worrying about hitting start stop on the watch is probably one of the singular best things you can do for overall longevity.
Right.
Because there is science out there that supports the idea that those who are more active in terms of I'm going out for a run or I'm going out, you know, to the gym to lift are often more sedentary outside of those times.
Mm.
You go crush it. Then you come back and it's like, I'm sitting at the desk or I'm sitting at home. I'm on the sofa. I'm doing the thing. Fewer and fewer of us are staying active throughout the course of our day. And that's really partially what our body craves. But all of this just comes down to, you know, elemental things that you can do for yourself in an effort to put yourself in a position to be successful.
Yeah. Now, the one thing, though, is you talked about how, yeah, you go out for a walk or you go to the gym and you feel good, and that helps feed that feeling that you want to do it again. However, so many people in this country will also reach for the Milky Way bar and, you know, and that sugar rush also feels good and encourages them. Yeah. Okay. I'll have another one, or I'll have a Snickers bar, or I'll have I'll go to Starbucks and go to somewhere and go get a big milkshake or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So it's a matter of channeling that good feeling in a healthier way.
To the extent. Yes. Yes, it is. Now I'm not going to sit here and tell you, you know, my approach to that is a little bit different as it relates to nutrition. And so we'll ride along with that, with the Milky Way. Hyper palatable foods are a problem in our country. They just are. They're readily available. They're cheap as chips, literally. And, and they have their desired effect. Like, they just do.
Oh yeah. Those food manufacturers know damn well.
But for the person who's trying to lose, you know, I'll say lose weight, but I'm implying body fat, right?
Right.
But for the person who's trying to lose 20 pounds, 50 pounds more, if the Milky Way is the one thing that helps you, if I have to concede a Milky Way to get you to go for a walk, you know, a couple of days a week, I'm okay with making trade-offs.
Yeah.
As we buy in and build some forward momentum, then we can really work on drilling down. Like, life from a vibrant perspective is not difficult. Move more often than you don't, on more a little bit often over the long haul. Okay? Pick things up and put things down. Move yourself in some sort of bipedal fashion. Walk if you can, and if you want to, go for a run. Cycling is fine. Swimming is great. Okay. Get some protein, not as much as what people tell you generally, right?
Right.
But keep your protein up because we need to keep that lean muscle mass on our body. Eat like an adult. Fruits and veggies, please. We all know it. Eat your fruits and veggies.
Right.
Drink your water.
Yep.
Get your sleep. Right. And eat your water, get your sleep. And there was one other thing that I completely forgot. I just absolutely spaced out on that. But these are all simple things that we know,
right,
for the most part. But the sad part is we get lost in all this dogmatic nonsense. And listen, we've all been around folks who were vegan, whole food, plant-based, vegetarian, pescatarian, keto, paleo, all the things. Liver King, God, I mean, go for it. But just understand, when you see that stuff, especially online in the social media space, understand that odds are they have something to sell you, or they are trying to sell you on something.
Oh, yeah.
And we as human beings gain benefit from the feeling of belonging to a group. So we want to label ourselves, right? Vegan or, you know, liver consumer or, you know,
that's a new one,
whatever, you know, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But the basis of a healthy, and I use air quotes on purpose because that is a very challenged and highly debated term. But the basis of a healthy lifestyle is pick things up, put things down, move yourself, have some protein, eat your fruits and veggies, drink your water.
Get some sleep.
Quality of sleep, I think, is really undervalued.
Very much so.
We don't look at that enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't look at that enough. We are really, generalization alert here, we are overly stressed, overly wired. I think sleep hygiene, like your ramp up before you crash out for the night, is super, super, super important. Like how you set your space up, right?
Right.
Is your room cool enough? Is it relatively free of distraction? Is it noisy? Do you have kids running around? And then what steps can you take in order to improve?
Yeah, and also people need to get off their screens before they go to bed because
I think that's really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really helpful. I do have a practice at night where I will do some word puzzles that shall remain nameless. They may rhyme with Wordle or something like that. I will do some of that. But then for the most part, and I'm certainly not suggesting this, but I have invested in an app for myself that has really helped with sleep in terms of, meditation at night or something a little bit more soothing. That's helped a ton. Also, eye mask. I will tell you, one of the best $20, some of the best $20 I've ever spent, an eye mask. Fantastic. An eye mask with Bluetooth headphones in it.
Oh, wow.
So you charge it overnight, you charge it during the day. You put this bad boy on, blacks everything out. You connect it to your phone, and then you can play, I don't know, like Rain outside or,
You want to hear a funny story, Dan, is when I was in New Jersey, I got woken up on Sunday morning by the rain pelting on the window pane outside the room I was sleeping in. And, I'm a light sleeper. I get woken up by noise like that and everything. And my cousin says, that's funny because I have a app that I use that has the sound of the rain that puts me to sleep. And it wakes me up.
I believe they call that irony.
Yeah. Yes.
Strangely enough, if you would look on my app right now, that rain would probably be right at the top of the list.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It just is.
Yeah. Well, people, sleeping next to a creek or whatever, but
so I think all this stuff kind of goes hand in hand. Yeah. It really does.
Right.
It's the we don't like the simple solutions, I'm not a fan of using sports analogies all the time, but it's like coming up to the plate and swinging for the fences when a single gets you on base.
Right.
Right. You don't need to go for the home run all the time. And I think that's important to remember as it relates to this. Stacking those wins on a daily basis, whatever the hell it is, lifting things nutritionally, getting out and getting steps in, stacking those wins. And again, it just mood follows action.
Right.
So if you're moving a little bit more, if you're increasing your steps, you're getting outside 10, 15 minutes at a time, whatever the hell it is, you start doing that. The next thing you know, when you open that refrigerator, maybe your thought process is a little different. Maybe. And then we start making some slightly different choices, which then feeds everything else. Suddenly we realize we're sleeping a little bit better, and it just becomes this self-fulfilling prophecy in a good way.
Yeah. So I would imagine somebody listening, though, Joe Unhealthy out there says, yeah, I need to do all those things. But that's really daunting when there is this huge menu of items I need to fix for me to lose weight, get in shape, achieve whatever goals, whatever. How do you suggest they tackle all those?
Because then it really can turn into paralysis by analysis, right?
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in finding the most elemental thing. What is the thing that you can do right now in this freaking moment that can help you get that much closer? Right.
Right.
So could it be how you set yourself? Sleep to me, right at the top of the pyramid. Sleep is at the top of the pyramid. It doesn't get talked about enough. Without proper sleep and proper volume of sleep, we're all zombies, literally zombies.
Right? Yeah.
So starting there with sleep, what are the simple things you can do? Is it putting your phone in another room? Is it silencing your notifications? I mean, simple things. It doesn't seem like much. We're not reinventing the wheel here.
Sure.
But you start low barrier to entry. Establish a habit there. And then once that becomes commonplace, then you add a little bit of complexity to it. It's like, okay, what more can I do? Would it be spending a couple of bucks on an eye mask to darken the room?
Right.
I think that's a great way to go. And then again, baby step, baby step, baby step. Nutrition would be the same way.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Strength would be the same way. Endurance would be the same way.
Yeah. No, I took a little baby step when I was visiting Asia this fall where normally my phone is not in the same room as where I sleep. But when you're in hotels and such, you know, you got to plug in your phone to charge it, you know, wherever. And I actually found such a light sleeper that I am, even though I could silence the phone, the vibration when some notification was coming in would wake me up. And because of the time difference, you know, a lot of times I was sleeping and when it was midday over here and I'd get a notification. So yeah, I had to turn off the vibration feature on my phone. Little and thing like hard. That.
Much like hyperpalatable food, again, to go back to your Milky Way reference, hopefully nobody from Mars Company is listening. These things are engineered to keep our attention, right?
Right.
All the devices, these hyperpalatable foods are engineered to be salty, crunchy, fatty, sweet, chewy, like all these things that just envelop us and they don't let go, or they're very hard to let go.
Right.
So I say, you know, it's important to acknowledge that and have some acceptance there. And then, okay, it's not about, let's go with the food thing for a second, because that really is a trigger for a lot of people, including some clients that I have. We don't want to get into a scenario where we say this food is inherently bad, or you can't have this, or this is off limits, because in the end, we still need to live our lives.
Yeah.
Right. You don't want to be the person to show up to a party and be like, well, I can't have that, but I brought my prepackaged whatever. That's not a way to live. That's not a way to live.
Right.
And I think too, you know, the other thing as it relates to nutrition is to steal the home run analogy from before. I think we try to go super extreme. We try to really cut back on calories, for instance. We try to pull all the joy out of everything that we eat and cut back maybe to half of our calories on a daily basis and make ourselves miserable.
Right.
And the reality is physiologically that never lasts. Mentally that never lasts because it feels like such a heavy lift. Whereas, and I'm a big believer in this and coach this, can we find 200, maybe 300 calories a day that we can strip out?
Right.
And we do that over the long haul. The likelihood of you staying with it through the roof, and physiologically, your body will adapt to it better. So if your goal is fat loss, for instance, and it is literally trickling off of you, quarter pound, half pound, maybe a full pound at a time, your body will not overreact and say, shit, I'm freaking out. I need to start holding on to whatever I have. Right? So your likelihood of success is that much greater.
Yeah, well, it's sustainable that way. I mean, because if you're not doing some kind of crazy thing where, hey, you're going to drop 20 pounds, you know, all at once, you know, and then obviously a lot of people, you know, they take it off and put it on just as often. You know, David Clark used to talk about how many times he lost 50 pounds, but it's not that he was getting down to zero. He was just ballooning back up again. And, you know, it's the same thing we talked before about how some people, they look to social media influencers for their workout programs. They find some buff 19-year-old who, you know, decided to change from being this pathetic, that's the wrong word, not pathetic, but somebody who's just grossly out of shape, and they say, hey, I worked out like crazy for a year, and now I'm buff, and I'm going to go sell my programs to people on the internet. And then people find them on Instagram or whatever, and somebody says, yeah, I want to do that too. So they have it in their mind like, yeah, I can easily just do what that guy did. I'm going to go from, you know, 350 pounds out of shape to this totally jacked 200 pound guy. And very quickly, I think they hit that discouragement level because it's not going to happen overnight. And they look at themselves in the mirror and say, yeah, I lost that 20 pounds initially and my bench went up by 30 pounds, but I've plateaued and I'm not getting anywhere. And before you know it, they lose interest and boom, there comes the weight right back on.
Looking to someone else for inspiration is a very slippery, slippery slope. I can be inspired by other people,
right?
But it does not necessarily, to me anyway, imply that I need to do exactly what that person did in order to validate that inspiration. I was always inspired, you know, so many of Dave's stories resonated with me in so many ways. The number of times he's lost 50 pounds, like that landed for me so hard.
Yeah.
As it's, you know, something that I've done over the years too. But I think far too often we see these people in the social media space. We look to them and be like, wow, wouldn't it be great to look like him or her? Herein lies the rub. For many of them who are out there in the social media space and who are likely gaining some revenue from posting these things, the work that goes into getting those pictures or those videos to be posted, most people are not willing to go to those extremes. You have to make yourself so incredibly miserable. It's literally chicken and broccoli all the time. You know, then you lean out, you effectively dehydrate yourself. You may be taking some supplements that might be somewhat questionable in an effort to get yourself for this small window of time in this physical condition where you can take countless photos that you can then pull from over the course of a year. It's very, very difficult to find, unless you have incredibly pure genetics, we are all perfectly imperfect.
Right.
And I think it's not looking towards him or her and saying, I want to be like that. It's how can I be the best me? And that requires a lot of inside work. Again, a lot of acceptance, a lot of patience, and meeting yourself where you are.
Right. And, you know, being the best me is both inside and out. It's, you know, you hear about people all the time doing, you know, self-improvement, whatever, but yeah, it applies to everything. And that's all you can be is the best you can be.
It is. But again, it goes back to the goal setting we talked about. Setting a goal, saying, all right, I want to be my best. Or I don't have any of them around here, but you know, any number of the books that I have on my bookshelf, I'm going to go read that book. I'm reading Brad Stolberg's Master of Change right now. Phenomenal book. I've read it, and then that's it. So by osmosis, I am therefore better. No, you have right. to apply that which you learn in an effort to improve yourself. That is how these things work. And yep. I feel like we can all stand to do just a little bit better at that. But again, tiny steps, you know, little incremental things, low barrier to entry.
Right.
We need to fall in love with the elemental stuff. You know, again, pick things up, put things down, move yourself,
yeah.
Eat some protein, drink your water, fruits and veggies.
Yeah,
get some sleep.
It's like I tell people, nobody who runs a 100-mile race was able to do that right out of the box.
No.
And you know, and people have heard me tell this story with David all the time. And I described in his book Out There how, you know, when he was huge, 320 pounds or whatever he was, he started off with a 15-second run on a treadmill, said he thought he was going to die, but the next day he did 30 seconds, Next day he did 45 seconds. All he added was 15 seconds of running. And to most people, they think that's nothing. But for him, it was like Mount Everest. But he built on it and built on it till finally, hey, he was a guy who could go and run a 100-mile race, or he could run Badwater, you know, whatever. But it started very, very small and added very tiny increments.
When people ask me how I started that, I mean, when I was 385, I probably lost maybe 30 or so pounds before I went out and bought my first pair of running shoes. Still friends to this day with the guy who owns the store.
Nice.
In Allentown, PA, not far. I walked in there and did not look like anybody else. But he was amazing and treated me like someone who deserved to be there. And I walked out of there with my first pair of running shoes. And I'm like, well, shit, what do I do now? And so, you know, the couch to 5K thing was a thing. We're talking 2005, 2006. And literally, just like David's story, it's 10 seconds at a time, 15 seconds at a time.
Right.
Literally just incrementally trying to add on what you can. Every little bit's a victory. Just to know that you can, 10 seconds is massive. The hardest part of all of it is deciding to do it and then going to do
it. Yeah.
Once you rip that Band-Aid off and do that thing, whatever the hell it is, the first time, once, that is the hardest thing you will ever do. From there, it's not going to be easy, but it gets easier.
Right. Well, and the other thing too is, you know, what I liked is, you know, David had a similar story about the first time he entered a running store, how welcoming it was. I mean, I hope every running store story that somebody who had never run before is similar. I mean, it would be a shame if the guy said, what are you kidding, dude? You're nuts. Yeah. So fortunately, you had that welcoming environment.
Yeah. And you know, when I got started in the coaching space, we're talking 2007, probably. I was still, you know, wearing a suit to work, but I would moonlight at a local running store in South Carolina on the weekends to be around, you know, to be around the vibe. We were running all the time. We had groups run together, but it was to show the every person approach.
Right.
Everyone is welcome here. You don't have to fit a certain build or look a certain way or run a certain pace or go a certain distance. We're all trying to do the same thing, which is, for the most part, just trying to be a little bit better than we were yesterday.
Yep. No, that's great. I mean, that's the way it should be in every coaching situation is, you know.
I'd like to think so.
Yeah, or mentoring, whatever. It's encouragement. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So you got that guy starting to walk west from Jersey to Boulder, and he's laying out a plan there. What's the best way to actually game plan for something like that?
I think pencil to paper. I'm a big fan, journaling in some capacity or another.
Right.
I'm not necessarily hawking a particular one, but there are some out there, on that famous online ordering site that we all know. There are some that offer a great balance of scheduling your day and also asking some probing questions and then just leaving a lot of blank space. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
So I can see what my day looks like. Every day I'm asked a slightly different question. Today's would be a victory that I am proud of. I haven't answered that one yet.
All right. What was yesterday?
Put me on the spot. It's a great question.
Yeah.
What is my main obstacle? How will I grow from it?
That's a good one.
Like this is not a simple yes or no.
No.
Like this is something that requires some thought. And I love the blank space. Again, not any particular one, but I love blank space where I can write notes to myself. I jot all my workouts down because I love doing that. I think it's a great habit to get into. I think putting pencil to paper and literally sketching out what it looks like. I love the 5-2 assignment. All credit to Dan John. He's one of my favorite people on the planet. Literally, I challenge anyone listening to this, and I've challenged some of my clients since I've been at that kettlebell certification. 2 decades, 2 years, 2 weeks, or 2 months, today, tomorrow.
Nice.
And it can evolve. It can change. It can be an app on your phone to take notes on. It can sort of shift and morph as you need it to. But man, it, you know, at different spots in your life, different times of day, different days of the week, it just lands different. It just lands different.
Right.
You know, not to betray anyone's confidence here, but there was one person at our certification, man, it's hard for me not to get emotional even thinking about it. But this person has a neurological disorder, and had right at the top of their list for 2 decades, I do not want to be a burden on my spouse. And literally there was not a dry eye in the space. And this is a person who strong, fit, but also is dealing with something very deep inside.
Wow.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah. Right?
And so it can be something like that. And then short term. How do I set myself up for success? And that's how I encourage people to approach carving out their roadmap, is look at the bigger picture, just like the sign says over the shoulder,
right? You
know, bigger picture.
Yep. Right? Yep. Which says, for those who are just listening, focused on the bigger picture. Yep.
Stay focused on the bigger picture. You have to, like, where are you going? And then working yourself closer, because then I'm a firm believer. If you ask yourself the honest questions, and if you answer them even more honestly, your roadmap then is by working today and tomorrow up.
Yes. Good.
Yeah. And I think it's applicable. Everyone's different. That's why I don't put out programs for massive release or anything like that. Everyone deserves something specifically engineered for them.
Right.
And so when I sit down and speak with someone about their goals, about their hopes, about their dreams, about what they want out of our working together, it comes down to, how can I meet you where you are? How can you meet yourself where you are? We establish that baseline, like we draw that proverbial line in the sand. And all right, everyone exhale. How do we get better from here? And right. And we just look for those things that are, I struggle to call them low hanging fruit because that seems almost too remedial, but you want that. You want wins. You want successes.
Sure.
And that's why I'm a big believer of, when you go into the gym, for instance, if you pick things up and put things down, don't go to failure. Not just physically, but mentally. What that does to you, it crushes you. So I'm a big believer. I challenge my folks, all of them. But one of the first things I'll say when we get into the gym, we're not going to miss today. Never miss a lift.
Okay.
We may struggle, right? It'll get sticky. It'll get hard. But we always want to make our lifts. You'll still be challenged. But again, we want something that is sustainable, repeatable, inside and out. Mentally, you feel good about it. Physically, you feel like you can get up and do something again tomorrow.
Yeah. So what if the lift workout is, you know, you're going to do 3 sets of 3 lifts or something like that. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you can't make it through the entire set, you know, maybe on that sure. last set or something.
Sure.
You know, I mean, that's not necessarily a loss. I mean, yeah, you said failure, but you know, hey, yeah.
If that's the case and that happens frequently, then I've failed you as you were training.
Right.
I haven't done my job. If the first time or two I meet with a new client, it's, look, I'm getting to know you. You're getting to know me. I'm going to introduce some stimulus to you. I think it's going to land based on how I've assessed you moving. Again, meeting you where you are. Right. I want to see you move in certain patterns. If you continually get into a pattern of not being able to achieve a certain thing in a certain way, then I've failed you.
Yeah,
no, everything in life can be progressed and regressed, made more challenging, less challenging, more complex, less complex. It doesn't make it any more or less valuable. They're all valuable.
Right.
But how can I help you be successful right now? So if there's a particular movement, you know, barbell back squat, which I don't think we as adults really need to do too much of anymore. Barbell back squat. For most people, it doesn't need to happen.
Right.
Okay. What else can we do? There are other movements that are equally as more beneficial than a barbell back squat.
Sure.
Based on where you are. It could be, say, a step up, varying heights. You could add weight to that step up. You could do a goblet squat holding a weight at your chest,
yeah,
which I would say for my money is probably one of the best mobility movements you can do. There's always a way, but if you are continually attempting the same definition of insanity, attempting the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, but you're just hitting the same wall, then I, as your trainer, as your coach, need to do better.
Yeah. Right. No, it would be like me as a running coach telling somebody who says, yeah, I've run a 10K, I'd like to run a marathon now. And I tell them, okay, your long run is going to be 16 miles and you totally crap out at 12. If I don't scale back that long run, then I'm probably doing a great disservice. Not that running 12 miles was bad for you, but it was just like, it was inappropriate for me to be recommending 16 miles right out of the chute.
And what does that require? That calls on open dialogue between a coach and a client, also with yourself.
Right.
You know, a ton of self-awareness for you, the client, what's working here, what's not working. And also a lot of self-awareness as it relates to the coach or the trainer. Like, what am I seeing here? What's not working? If I have someone continually show up saying, man, I'm really sore from 3 days ago, I have failed you. Right. I'm not a fan of making people miserably sore because I want you to move in a way that fulfills you every freaking day.
Right.
In some capacity or another. In some capacity. If you struggle to get out of bed, I did it wrong.
Right.
I literally did. And by the way, that's bad for business.
Yes, very much so. But, you know, also, you know, points to the fact that there are so many canned programs out there. And, you know, obviously there are a lot of canned weightlifting programs. You know, we talk a little bit about the Instagram influencers who will, you know, create a custom plan for you for better, for worse. But it's so tempting for people to say, well, I'm going to train for a marathon and I found this thing online. Well, unless you have it tailored to your individual needs, you may fall into some really bad traps out there because everybody is different. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people who, you know, I had Charlie Lawrence on here, a guy who's running in the Olympic Trials Marathon that'll take place a day after this recording. But, you know, he's running 140 mile weeks. Well, I know when I was training, if I got over 70 to 80 miles a week, I broke down.
Right.
And there were other ways, though, that I could maximize my bang for the buck. It was just that trying to run 100 mile a week would not have worked for me very successfully.
I think that's a great point to make, Bill, because to your, and this might be a bit extreme, as it relates to the endurance space, volume matters. Some people respond really well, 50 to 80. Some people respond really well over 100 a week. One of my favorite running books, actually the first running book I ever bought years and years ago, was from the guys down at Furman University. I'm blanking on their names, but it was Run Less, Run Faster. 3 day a week training. I need to see if I still have that. 3 days a week training, harder than you're accustomed to. I think specifically training for halves and fulls.
Yeah.
Halves and fulls. Faster, harder, a tempo day, an interval day, and a long run day. And your long run is run harder than it normally would be.
Hmm.
So it's like I say all the time, if your intensity is up, volume has to be down.
Right? Sure.
Whereas the reverse can be true. If your intensity is low, then volume can go up. Right? And I'm a fan of both, by the way.
Yeah.
If you're going to go hard, say like, you know, running 800 meter repeats or 400s or whatever it is, go for it, but keep your volume manageable. There's still benefit in easy miles too. I would never refer to them as junk miles.
Oh, heck no.
You know, what a lot of people love talking about zone two stuff.
Yeah.
Jeez, zone two stuff.
That's a big buzzword these days, right?
But I think there's utility in easy volume too. Sometimes we look to go too hard too often. Sometimes we maybe could push ourselves a little bit more.
Yeah.
In the right space. But in my experience, I've found that a lot of people just really look to, if I'm not feeling the burn, I'm not doing it right.
Right. Oh, for sure. Yeah. But you know what worries me about your South Carolina guy's method there, though, it reminds me of, you go in the supermarket and see Runner's World on the shelf there. And to sell a magazine, they were constantly putting, run a marathon on 4 days a week, run a marathon on 3 days a week, run a marathon on 2 days a week. And, you know, but hey, you know what? I'm not sure if they really cared if the people succeeded or not. They were selling magazines because to most Americans, hey, that sounds great. I can run a marathon. I run twice a week. Awesome.
Right. Right. And you might be able to. You might be able to. Right. Your experience may not be as great as you would like. But that's one of the reasons why I do believe in individualized approaches for everyone. I'm very honest. Even when I interview with a client the first time, and I approach it as an interview, always prepared.
Yep.
You know, it's important that they understand that there's a bit of an exploratory process involved to find pain points and what works and what doesn't. But for the most part, we're going to hit on all the fundamentals in terms of movement patterns. And we're going to talk about nutrition, especially if it's, you know, at the top of your list of things you want to address. You know, nutrition, movement, sleep, of course, hydration, especially now because so many people are still working from home or have hybrid type of schedules. The more we work from home, we're more creatures of habit. So our bodies are generally beaten up a little bit more and out of shape and discombobulated. So we need to undo all of those things.
Yeah. And the other thing is those programs, canned programs, are not tailored for, as you mentioned, individual circumstances. I think a big one is age. I mean, I coach high school kids who, by definition, during cross-country and track seasons, they have to come to practice 5 days a week and then have a meet on the weekend. College kids who have all sorts of flexibility in their schedule, and they probably can handle three hard workouts a week. And then I'm coaching boomers who are, you know, if I give them more than two hard workouts in a week, they're going to break down.
And push back and break down.
Yeah, exactly. And then there's life. You know, a lot of people, as you mentioned, some are working from home, some are still, you know, going back to the office and commuting. And you got to work it into, you know, they got kids, they got other responsibilities. And so you're not going to find that very well addressed by a canned program that you found on a search on the internet.
I agree. Or just because I see him or her doing this thing on social media, therefore, I need to do that same thing in order to achieve whatever it is I'm seeing. But, you know, I have had clients in the past who have said, yeah, but insert famous runner person does this. Or, yeah, but, you know, I overheard someone talk about doing that. Okay. You know, I think it's helpful to we always want to see how the other half lives. Right. We always want to make sure that we're doing the best we can with the information that we have. Listen, there are things I've been coaching in the fitness space now, we'll say 15 years, 2007. So anyway, there are things that I believed to be true back then that I do not believe to be true now. And I try to keep my ego in check where I can say, okay, I thought I was right. I kept reading. I kept learning. I realize now I was wrong. That was, or maybe less right than I thought. We need to be okay with that. So we're all an experiment of one, right? N equals one is a huge part of this. So what you as an individual, your goals, physical, intrinsic, whatever they are, your goals are going to be unique to you. And then therefore how you go about them in every single step, going back to the original 5-2 assignment, right? 2 decades, 2 years, 2 weeks, 2 months, today, tomorrow, it's going to be different for everybody.
Yeah.
Because you are you and your bandwidth is different from everyone else. Your pain points are different from everyone else. So when you're talking about, say, you had mentioned prepackaged, say like strength programs, for instance, they're all over the place.
Oh,
you can drop, you know, $10, $50, $100 more. You know, sadly, and I recently purchased one. I won't say what it was or who it was from. It doesn't really matter. but I recently purchased one because I was just freaking curious. The claims were pretty reasonable. But then I look at this program and I'm like, these movements are not for the every person.
Yeah.
These movements will hurt people. And so sometimes we just go, again, extreme, extreme, extreme. But the reality is, from a strength standpoint, right, we need to squat in some capacity. Again, all can be scaled. We need to squat. We need to hinge. We need to push. We need to pull. And we need to work on our core in some capacity.
Right.
Right. We do those five things. You're covering just about all the bases. You want to do curls. You want to do the other stuff. Hey, go for it by all means. But those major food groups need to always get covered for all of us.
Yeah, no, that's a really good list there. And it's something that the average person go to the gym or in their basement or whatever, even without weights, but you can accomplish that in 30 minutes.
Totally.
Yeah, you can do a squat at home. You could take a paint can for your goblet squat, for instance, or hinging, of course, doesn't require any special equipment and so on. I often travel with an elastic band so that I can do, if I'm in a hotel room, I can get a pretty good complete workout with furniture and a band, you know?
I agree with that. I have a client now who I've been working with for quite some time. She started with, in fact, just that. I recommended a set of bands, some slightly longer, say that would work the hips a little bit more, and then some that would go around the ankles for, say, more, you know, foot driven work, right?
Yeah.
Started with that, purely body weight. And that, to me, I find so liberating is not the right word, but it just opens so many doors, especially when you add something as simple as an elastic band, because it turns on all of these little muscles that we did not know we had. Lower body and upper body, by the way.
Oh yeah. Right?
Yeah. It shows us a lot of gaps, things we need to address, and then it just lays a foundation for things we can do down the road. Body weight is a great way to start. Again, it doesn't need to be complicated. What it needs to be is consistent.
Sure.
Well, you just need to show up.
Yeah, no, body weight exercises are great, and I think they. But again, I think they're also great ways to fill gaps sometimes. You know, if you don't have access to the gym, if you are traveling, and one thing that always kills me is people tell me, "Well, I'm going on vacation with the family, so I won't be able to run, or I won't be able to, you know, do my strength training." It's like, yeah, you can if you want to.
Yeah. And that's a limiting belief.
Yeah, it's a limiting belief. I mean, I tell people, you know, if you're going to run, typically do it first thing in the morning before the day's activities start filling up, you know. But, you know, something like, you know, with a band, I mean, you're going to be in a bedroom either waking up or going to sleep. So it could be when you wake up. It could be before you go to sleep. Do some exercises. It doesn't take much.
If you want to, yes, you there is a way.
Yep.
there is totally a way. I do think a lot of times, say if we are traveling, we will program ourselves with this, flawed belief that, well, since I'm traveling, I can't do the thing that I'm accustomed to doing. So therefore,
yep,
I'm not going to do anything. Unseen in my space right here, just off to my left here on the floor, is my collection of 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, like 15 kettlebells. When the pandemic hit, it was all I could get my hands on. And then I just fell in love with them. Kettlebells are not the greatest thing in the world. They're not the end all be all for all people in all places and at all times, but I just really freaking like them.
Yeah.
If I go travel and I don't have access to these, all is not lost.
Yeah. Right? Kettlebells are tough to put in a suitcase. Yeah.
Kettlebells are tough to put in a suitcase. they do make adjustable kettlebells. I'm not going to get into all that, but
I always wondered how that works. You know, even you see like those adjustable dumbbells, and I'm like, I don't even understand how that possibly works. But that we don't have to discuss that here.
No, but I will say just to that point, because you know I'm a big believer in making things accessible for the home, right?
Right.
If people want to work at home. My workout space here is about 10 feet by 8 feet, huge mat, right? An adjustable kettlebell, especially the new ones that are out now, are basically one shape. They maintain their outside circumference.
Right.
The dimensions never change. There's a hex nut at the bottom and plates on the inside that get fixed and screwed in.
Oh, okay.
So you go from 8 kilograms, 18 pounds, up to 32 kilograms, which is 71 pounds. You buy that one singular piece. I'm not flying a particular flag for a brand, but you buy that one singular piece, you get good at working the kettlebell, you will have a toy that you will be able to use for the rest of your life. So I'm a big believer in having things around that are super, super helpful. You mentioned bands. Bands of all kinds, hips, ankle bands. They have the monster bands that are like the 4 or 6 foot long loop bands. Yeah. Those are great as well. You can do a bunch of different things with those. It doesn't need to be, you don't need anything.
Right.
Just give me you and I will find a way to turn some stuff on within you. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bands are a lot easier to pack. They were just,
bands are a lot easier to pack. I do know someone who travels internationally with a 16 kilogram kettlebell. That's 35 pounds. I'm like, okay.
Yeah. I want to explain that one to the TSA as you're going through.
Yeah. But, listen, you know, fitness can be whatever it needs to be. It doesn't have to look like a specific thing. Again, the singular most important element, consistency. Whatever right. it is, just show up for yourself first. Show up. Be consistent. I don't want to say check those boxes in a transactional kind of way, but it almost kind of is. Show up. Do what you need to do in the most elemental way you can. Set yourself up for success.
Right.
And then it's just, and then from there, you can springboard and do the more complex, the more demanding.
Yeah. No, even, you know, I'm working on a couple writing projects right now, and I saw somebody, you know, does writing where they just set the alarm an hour early every day, mm-hmm. and they just get up and write. And I know, you know, I tend to be more productive in the morning, you know, because I used to be such a night owl, and I would eat dinner and realize, like, yeah, I'm not doing anything now. It's, you know, I'm done for the evening here. But it just takes maybe just one little thing, just one, you know, just like set the alarm, whether it's to go out for an early run or whether it's right. whatever goal you have, just set the alarm or set a time, you know, put it in your appointment book. You know, hey, yeah. if you're a noontime workout kind of guy, just say, hey, I am guarding this time. I will go out and run from noon to one, or I'm going to go lift from noon to one, whatever it is, set that time as an appointment on your calendar.
In a highly observant, self-aware kind of way. If I continue to do that same thing, set the alarm, note my calendar, whatever the case is, and it's not working, be self-aware enough to say, okay, what do I need to do in order to make it a lower barrier to entry? Right.
Right.
I used to think if I didn't work out first thing in the morning, lift or run, if I didn't work out first thing in the morning, it was a failure. Mm. Like somehow, some way, the rest right. of my day didn't exist, which is the most nonsensical thing. Right.
Right.
The reality is you have a window of time, even if it doesn't look like exactly how you planned, a little bit of something is better than a whole lot of nothing.
That's true. Yeah, you've heard you hear a lot of stories about, hey, just go out and walk for 10 minutes each day, or do it 3 times a day even. You know, it's like
folks working from home. I challenge them. Folks working from home, I challenge them. 10 or 15 minutes first thing in the morning. Get the kids off for school if that's a thing before you log on. 10 minutes.
Right.
Lunch, 10 minutes. After work, go decompress. Step outside, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
You do that. You get 30 minutes of walking. You're probably at 1.5 to 2 miles of steps you would not have gotten in otherwise. That is a phenomenal start. Now, in the court of public opinion, it may not appear to be enough, whatever the hell that means.
Right.
But it is a phenomenal place to start. And is it repeatable? Is it accessible? Is it something that I can do easily? Put the shoes by the door. Is it accessible? Is it repeatable?
Right.
Can I do this? And is it something I want to do?
Well,
I'm not going to sit here and tell people you need to go run and you need to lift kettlebells. Otherwise, you're never going to achieve anything that you want. I'm not going to say that. That does not compute. That works for me. And that has worked for me. But the reality is meet yourself where you are.
Yeah.
What can we do right now to set ourselves up for success so we can just be incrementally better. And I mean incrementally better. It's as simple as I had a client some years ago who had a high volume relationship with full sugar soda. Like just, I mean, multiple cans a day.
Right.
And it was as simple as doing the math on how many calories that is in a can over 6, 7, 8 cans a day. Now, we don't go cold turkey and say, if you're not drinking water instead of soda, you're going to die. Well, no, right. It's not quite that dramatic. But we swapped it out for, you know, zero calorie.
Diet soda, right? Yeah, sure.
You swap that out. Look at all the calories you're saving. Are you still scratching that itch to a degree? Yes. It is a concession, but you're still scratching that itch.
Right.
And look at all look at the dent you're making in your caloric intake. It's huge.
Absolutely. No, those little steps do add up a lot. Yeah.
They do.
Yeah.
They do. Yeah.
Yep. So, well, good. Hey, these are good actionable items here, Dan. So, I hate to throw too much at people all at once. We can certainly do that. And, you know, what else should people be thinking about here in terms of getting goals into action here right now?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is really putting pencil to paper and considering considering that 5-2 assignment that I mentioned before. It's been really enlightening for me. Again, one more time, it's 2 decades. What do you see for yourself, or what do you want for yourself in 2 decades, 2 years, 2 weeks, or 2 months, today and tomorrow? And again, it can be financial, it can be health-driven, it can be performative, right? It can be anything you want it to be. And then as you work your way down to today and tomorrow, you'll realize, so long as you continue to be honest with yourself, you will realize that you have created for yourself a bit of a roadmap to get to, you know, 20 years from now.
Absolutely. Well, that's great stuff. You said it was Dan John who gave you that whole idea.
Actually lives not too far from you. He's out in Utah. Somewhere in Utah.
Utah is a whole different world from Colorado. Come on.
Okay.
Well, maybe people can look that up too. Where can people find you out there, Dan?
Real simple. You can find me at danhermanperformance.com. I have not changed much about the website, but it is there. You can find me on Instagram also at danhermanperformance. I am working. I've done some things on YouTube in the past to answer some client questions and things like that. But I think in the not too distant future, we're going to see a podcast coming in before too long. Something short form, but still something that I hope will be helpful to others.
Well, good. Well, I'm on board to help you out with that. I'd love for you to get your message and your fantastic training out there.
Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate it.
Of course. If someone wants to just contact you directly, you know, wants to ask you questions that may pertain to them, because as we said, we don't necessarily say, hey, go to Dan's website and you'll get this canned program out there. That's not what we're all about. But if somebody wants to reach you directly, what's the best way?
You can hit me up at Instagram, certainly, Dan Herman Performance. You can drop me a DM there. That's fine. I check that all the time. Or you can email me, dan@danhermanperformance.com. And I'm responsive and will answer each and every email and question that I get.
Well, that's the least people can ask for.
Absolutely.
Well, good. Well, hey, this has been all sorts of fun. I was going to say, hey, it's like bringing me back to the East Coast here, but I was just there. So.
But, I think you're good for a while, right?
Yeah, that's except for maybe getting to a Rangers or Knicks game. I don't have any real urge to go back to the East Coast now after that. But hey, it's great to catch up with you here, man. I think it's always great to catch up with you at the beginning of the year and get people a little fired up here. And, hopefully you're accomplishing great things for people out there, and people will go accomplish great things for themselves too.
We're working hard at it every day, Bill. I certainly do appreciate it.
Sounds good. All right, buddy.
Thank you.
I always love chatting with Dan, a good East Coast dude for sure. Find Dan at danhermanperformance.com and on Facebook and Instagram at danhermanperformance. And again, drop me a message at silly_billy@msn.com or on Facebook or Instagram messengers if you might be interested in being one of the inaugural 10 individuals in the Be Positive Runners community. Thank you to Dan, and thanks again to all of you for listening to the We Are Superman podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you can load all new episodes onto your phone. And if you enjoyed the podcast, the best thing you can do is share it with your friends or on social media. And please do me a favor and take 60 seconds, give us a 5-star rating on whatever platform on which you listen to us. I would like to get 100 of these 5-star ratings and reviews out there. That would really help us a lot, and I would also be humbly honored. These 5-star ratings and reviews really do help us make more episodes and rise higher in the podcast services search algorithms, I can say that, helping more people find our show. Until next time, always be positive.